Hello, everybody. Mark Carlson here, SNIA Technical Council Co-Chair. Welcome to the STC Podcast. Every week, the STC Podcast presents important technical topics to the storage developer community. Each episode is hand-selected by the SNIA Technical Council from the presentations at our annual Storage Developer Conference. The link to the slides is available in the show notes at snia.org/podcasts. You are listening to STC Podcast, episode 104.
My name is Matthias, and I want to talk about OpenCL SSDs. I've been doing this for a couple of years now, and kind of going to give it like an introduction to OpenCL SSD. What is it? Where are we going? And then we're going to talk a little bit about what's next. So we're at the stage now where we're going to look a little bit forward and see where we're going to end up and what we're going to work on in the next 1 or 2 years. So now I previously was at a startup, and I'm on a big company, so I get to present this nice-looking slide, which basically say that you shouldn't trust what I say. It doesn't mean anything, but I still take it for him with a grain of salt. So that's all good.
But you got lawyers.
I got lots of them. Like, that's a SanDisk. I mean, we lawyered up. I mean, we don't need anymore. Yeah. So there's the motivation, the interface, the ecosystem, and what's next. And there's some great news here regarding standardization. For me personally, it's been something very big for me. Something I've looked forward to. We're gonna talk about that. So OpenCL SSDs, why are they interesting? So there's this thing when you look at an SSD today and you do 4K random reads to it and you kind of look at the latency and how long it takes, and then you look at the percentiles, like how many of the IOs completes within 100 microseconds, 150 microseconds, and you can kind of draw this curve. And if you only have reads to an SSD, it's pretty consistent. Like, most of your IOs like completes within 150 microseconds. So that's great. Obviously, over time, you will have these outliers, but generally, your curve will look like that. The problem with SSDs are that as soon as you start adding in just a small bit of writes, that's when it hit you, and you start having these outliers. 4 milliseconds, 6 milliseconds, and so on. And, I mean, that's okay. They're still vastly fast, but the thing is, if you're running these things at scale and you have 100 SSDs, 1,000 SSDs, and you have to go ask each of them for this answer, and you're kind of waiting on the last one in that row, like you need to get all the data back before you can give back the final answer, then your latency will be those 4 milliseconds, and that's not good enough. So how can you either control it, make it better, and how can you kind of make sure that it doesn't happen so you avoid it? And obviously you can say, well, if I can isolate my workloads and say, well, I have one SSD, they were small, like a couple of 100 gigabytes, and your workload could fit within that, that's great. The thing with SSD NAND in general, the media that is within SSDs, is that they're getting bigger and bigger, like more and more dense. And that means that we are not, if you're a hyperscaler and you run a virtual machine workloads, then you're going to have multiple customers sharing the same drive. And they're not coordinating. One guy can read, another guy can write. And suddenly everyone has like really bad performance. And that kind of drops into, so that's that kind of problem where you have a multi-tenancy environment and you kind of have this where many users are sharing the same drive, and you get these unpredictable latencies. The other parts is that all these different users are having different workloads. Some of them are running databases. Some of them are in place. It's a MySQL database. Some of them are out of place, like RockCB. You have sensors, you have analytics, virtualization, you have video, and they all have different characteristics, different how much can be compressed, and so forth. And in these environments, you stuff them all onto the same SSD. And how can you build an SSD that has to be generic for all these workloads? That's the hard part. It's really hard to make an efficient SSD that works for all these workloads. So what usually happens is that a customer, hyperscaler or all flash array guy tells them that's the volume. This is my workload. Please go optimize for it. And then an SSD vendor will go off and do these optimizations. And you can do that, but then you're optimizing for that particular workload. And the problem that especially hyperscalers have is that obviously you know some workloads. They don't change that much. But in general, you don't know. You say my workload is this 1 week, and the next week is something else. So you cannot say this is general, and it changes too much. And they have to plan years in advance for kind of when is the new drive, when are we going to deploy, and so on. So that's not really feasible for them. So the idea here would be to kind of, can we shuffle this around a bit? So before that, I just want to like give a short introduction to SSDs in general. And basically within an SSD, you have this media on the bottom, the dies, the NAND dies. And when you access those, you can read from them, so it's like 50 to 100 microseconds. When you write to them, it takes like 1 to 10 milliseconds. And when you erase for them, it's like 3 to 15 microseconds. So the idea is that you can read anywhere from within the NAND chip if you want to, but you have to write sequentially within this thing called a fast block. And if you want to write again, you have to erase it. That's kind of the constraints that we work under. There's a lot of more details, but that's the general kind of things around it. And then the way that the SSD gets its performance is that we're going to shuffle a lot of them together, and that's how we get the throughput of the drive. And we kind of get this parallelism going on and so on. That's why you see the curves, like a low Q-depth, you have quite like so-so in performance, whereas when you start firing off more Q-depth on them, then see where you get the bandwidth of the drive. That's because you can utilize more of these at the same time. That's really great. So what you probably notice is that NAND has the read-write erase interface, but we have to opt to the host, we're actually talking read-write. So there has to be something in between. So this can be in hardware, in firmware, whatever. But generally, you have to have this where you have this logical to physical translation layer where you take this read-write erase and convert it into the read-write interface. So that's this translation map. You have wear-labeling, so NAND is not perfect at all. I mean, you're lucky if you could get your data back unless you have some really good ECC scheme. That's kind of what it boils down to. So you need to make sure how you place the data. You have to wear it evenly. You have to do a lot of tricks to kind of make the promises of a normal hard drive, and you could do read-write. So when we get to that durability level, you actually have to do quite a lot of work. Then there's all this bad log management. There's media error handling, which is where, you do all the stuff that you actually make the media durable and actually works as you expect it to. So that's kind of what goes on within an SSD in the broader picture. But that's not the only thing. The other thing is that when we look at the host, it's actually also a problem, is that if I'm a data in an application, I sit on the top in user space, and I'm RocksDB, and I'm communicating, I want to read LBA 10. Fine. Then it hits my file system, which is kind of also lock stored. So RocksDB is lock stored, and the file system within a lock structure. And what goes on is when I hit my file system, it might convert it onto LBA 20. Fair enough. And then the thing is, with the flash translator before, that's also a kind of lock structured file system. So again, I'm going to end up drive. I'm going to end up maybe on LBA 30 or something like that. So I have no idea when I go up from the RocksDB and go down through the layers where my data are actually ending up. And the thing with SSDs are, you want to co-locate data on a flash block such that the data have the same age. You want to make sure that you don't have, at some point, have active data. When you come around and you want garbage collect, if you have like half of the flash block with active data and half of it with cold, then half of it will be invalid and doesn't care, but you still have to move the active data away. And that part is really expensive. That's called write amplification on SSDs. And that's kind of what we kind of want to avoid, and that's what kind of OpenChannel tries to solve. And that kind of brings me to this indirect write. So within an SSD, we have the lock structure, but we are writing into a write buffer. So when you're going to write to this flash block, you're not writing 4K at a time. You do if you maybe have SLC or something, that kind of memory. But in generally, you write at like 16K or 48K or something like that, or maybe even more than that if you're riding across something called planes. And so you kind of collate all the data together, and then you flush it out to the drive. And you don't know if you just started at the start of a block or at the end of the block of a flash block. You as a user has no knowledge of that. So that's a big problem. And it basically becomes this best efforts approach where, I mean, we do our best with the data we got. And SSD has a read-write interface. Obviously, it does have more today with NVMe streams, for example, so we can do more. But in general, like up to recently, that was kind of what you had. And the SSD can only do so much. So that's kind of what we want to look at. So OpenShell SSDs, the goals are that we have I/O isolation. So these dies, you want to be able to access them independently. We have predictable latency. So we want to make sure that we can avoid having these outliers that we saw in the beginning. And we want to control the data placement and when we actually access the drive and access the media. And so this comes into, we want to know, like, if we know the boundaries of the flash block, we can then be smart and make sure the host maybe already know what kind of, how hot my data is and what kind of data that fits together. Let's put it on the same flash block. So when I'm going to need to erase it, I can do it at the same time. So often SSDs is that on the first pass, you just write it in, and then later on, you optimize it, and then you flush out the data into different super blocks. I'm going to get back to that, but that's generally how it works. So what OpenShell is that we take these parts, the logical to physical translation map, we take the garbage collection, and then we kind of split the well leveling into two. That's what's happening. And so we have this logical to physical translation map, which we now give the host or the SOC or whoever we want to do it to give it that responsibility. The garbage collection, if we know, so usually when you get these outliers in the SSD and you don't know why it happens because the user is not doing any writes but the drive is, then, hey, it's because the garbage collection within the drive. We'll move that into the host such that we can make the decision of when to do it. And if the data placement, if the application we kind of have to do it doesn't need garbage collection in the like traditional way, we can avoid that too. For example, RocksDB has a log structure in itself, so we don't need, in the common sense, a garbage collector, which is normally within the SSD. Then there's logical value labeling, which it's kind of an abstraction a little bit away. We don't want to tell the host. We have like the array cycles, P cycles in SSDs. We don't want to tell the host that detail because it's meaningless. It can change over the lifetime of the SSD and so on. So instead, we want to give the host a hint of where to place the data. And that's what we're going to do. Obviously, now that we moved all this up to the host, well, now we need software to drive all that. So if we want to have an open channel drive and let it be a block device, like a normal drive, we can build a host-side FTL. Which does this L2P, logical to physical translation map, do the garbage collection, logical evaluating. And has similar overhead to traditional SSDs. So one of the things with SSDs that are on the market today is that if you have 1 terabyte of storage and media, you usually use 1 gigabyte of DRAM to kind of buffer for that mapping table when it arrives. There's different optimizations you can do, but if you don't want to do these kind of lookups that kind of in give you extra latency and so on, you're going to need 1 gigabyte of DRAM per 1 terabyte of storage. So that's really bad. You know, that costs money. That's how it is. Like file systems and databases, I mean, if we can integrate it there and utilize what we already have there in FTL, then we can kind of remove this layer that are within the SSD, the FTL, remove that logic and kind of integrate it to what we already have today. So when we look at an open channel SSD, we look at the concepts. Like, we break it out. What is it actually we are introducing with this? So it's a concept called chunks, where we do sequential write-only LBA ranges, which is this. And this, you can say that this maps into a flash block where you have to write sequential within. That's kind of concept that we expose up to the host. Then we want to make sure we can align the writes to these internal block sizes. So we want to tell the host what are the boundaries of which it should write. Then it's hierarchical addressing. So we have this parallel units, which we're going to talk about. How do you address them individually? We have host-assisted media refresh, So an SSD actually does read scrubbing internally and move data around. We don't see it, but it happens. We could move it around as an SSD, but we can also tell the host, please move it around, because then the host would know, and it can kind of schedule it out. Maybe it doesn't need to because the data is somewhere else. So there's all these optimizations where we can start applying. And then there's this host-assisted well-living that I was talking about. So for chunks, it's a range of LBAs for write once we see control. The cool thing about it is that it reduces the DRAM for the logical to physical mapping table by orders of magnitude. So instead of having a gigabyte of DRAM per 1 terabyte of media, we can then go away with like 1 or 2 megabytes per terabyte, which is great. Like, this is the best case. Obviously, we want to have some hybrid, but in generally, range we are. And we can do this hot-cold separation. We know data. When we start writing to a chunk, we can kind of move right to this chunk with the cold data and with the hot data and so on. And then the key part is, that I said, with the NAND flash, you need to erase it before you can write again. So within the open channel world, that's called a reset, which we can then, when you want to go back again, then you can kind of, perfect. Then you need to reset it. So basically a chunk starts in this state free, and you want to go into it, and when you start writing to it, it changes state into be open. Then you write a bunch to it, and then at some point it's full. Like, say you have 4 megabytes, that's what it is. Then when you wrote 4 megabytes, it will go into a closed state. And then you have valid data there, and then until then, and you want to use it again, you have to reset, and you go back up. So that's kind of how the normal work with it. So for those of you familiar with like SMR drives, like single magnetic drives from the hard drive world, that's the implicit device model. We took that from the SMR world and brought it into OpenTel. So that meant that we could both use the ecosystem that is already there for SMR, but it also means that we had like a tried model for how to do this. So it's more by accident that we kind of fit together both for SMRs and for how it fits together with this open channel model. Cool. So, and obviously, now that we are talking SMR drives, some of these drives have like conventional zones, and they have sequential write-only zones. Chunks. So in SMR, it's called zones, and open channel is called chunks. So the open channel spec kind of allows that, and if it's conventional, you can do random with sequential, that's all good. And then for those chunks where we need to be sequential write, we define that and we have to do that. The host software needs to do that sequential writing. That's all great. So then there's the hierarchical addressing, where we kind of see you have a normal SSD down here, and normally within SSD you have like NAND controller and then you have multiple channels. And then to those channels, you have like these dies attached that you saw before. So in open channel, we call that those channel groups, and then we call the dies parallel units. So the guarantee from a parallel unit is that they are independent from the other parallel units. So you can do read or write to either of them at the same time, and they won't conflict. Obviously, if they share the same channel or group, they do share some bandwidth constraints, but in general, you can do read and write from the same. And the important thing is here that this is all, it's not a one-to-one mapping. It doesn't have to be in implementations today. It usually is. But you could have like 4 dies that are slot together and be 1 parallel unit and expose that up to the host if you wanted to as an SSD. But it's not a requirement. You can do anything how you want it to do. And then how does that look? How does the host address it? So it has these LBAs that we saw before. And we lay on top the chunks that we're going to have. And then within those, then a parallel unit has a set of chunks within it. And then there's the group that kind of groups the parallel units together. And that's all exposed up through the NVMe address space, like the LBA address space that you get through your normal drive. You just tell the host this is how it works. So that means you have your NVMe namespace, and then you have your groups and parallel units and the chunks. That's kind of a logical way to look at it. So that's how it's exposed. Then the media refresh, we have this idea is that, so what I talked about is that the SSD NAND, it doesn't store the data forever. You kind of need to refresh it. You as a drive can do that. But now that we kind of let the host do the data placement, well, now we can tell the host, hey, please go refresh this data. So that's what we're going to do. And then you can read the data and then write it somewhere else. Or maybe, so if you're a hyperscaler, you might have three different copies somewhere in your data center. You don't really need to refresh it. As the next thing, you can do that kind of optimizations as well. Then there's the hosted aware labeling, where we kind of, when we write to the SSD, we don't know the temperature of the data. That's the idea. And we kind of, when we go through it, when we garbage collect it, so we do all the writes, and we have this concept of a superblock with an SSD. It has many names, but let's call it a superblock. It's basically where you stripe across multiple chunks or multiple flash blocks within an SSD. So you shuffle everything into that to begin with. You write it out, and then later on, you come around the garbage collector, picks it up, and then starts garbage collecting the data. And then it sees there's some of it that's warm, there's still valid data, and there's some of it that's cold, and then it splits it up into two different super blocks. And then as we go on, then we see, hey, now we have like super blocks that have like the warm data and the cold data, and we kind of make sure that the data like fits together. And what we can do is if we have a prior information about this, how they're going to fit, what's the age of the data, we can do this placement directly at the same time. So we don't have to rewrite the data again and again. That's kind of the idea. So we enable the host to kind of know if I have cold data, I should probably use chunks which are near their end of life. So Say you have a flash block, and that flash block, you can erase that, say, 3,000 times. And I'll use it for hot data a lot, and then suddenly I only have like 1,000 erases left. But I have lots of other blocks which still have 3,000 erases left, resets left. And I want to make sure that, okay, then I know the cold data, let's move that into the chunks that only have these 1,000 erases left, because then we're not going to update it as much. That's the kind of optimization. So if we know something about the data, we can kind of apply it. So all this together is all in the spec. That's kind of the concepts. When you go through the spec, that's kind of what it's built upon. So we have the IO isolation, where we go through the groups and parallel units. We have the fine-grained data refresh, where we do refresh the data. We have to reduce the write amplification, because we can kind of place the data down at the right places, such that we don't have to rewrite data as much, so it just reduces the amount of data refresh that we have to do. There's the DRAM and overvisioning, because we're writing append only, so we can reduce the mapping table to this couple of megabytes. And then we have these direct writes towards this expensive internal data movement. So that's all great. That's a spec. It's worth exactly zero if you don't have a software ecosystem on top of it. So one thing is putting all this together. The other part has been to build this open ecosystem around it. And basically what this means that we've been building, like in the Linux kernel, we've been extending it such that, for example, we have taken the NVMe device driver, and we extended it such to support so it can detect open channel SSDs. There's support for like these 1.2 and 2.0 specifications. And basically what it does is that there's this light NVMe subsystem in the kernel, which is the open channel subsystems part. And basically that registers with that part, so we know it exists. That's great. And then the next part is, and then we also, there's a new thing now, which we're going to come back to, is like we have this zone block device, and that's how you kind of combine it in with how SMR drives works today. So that's really great. So the light NVMe subsystem, what is that? That's the core functionality, which kind of we say we register up to this system. So the NVMe drive come up, and we talk to the light NVMe subsystem, and then we're there. And then we expose it up to the host. It doesn't do anything at this point. We then say, hey, we want to put something on top, and this can be something called, for example, there's a host-side FTL called pblock, which we can put on top, and then we can show itself as an open channel drive. So that's cool. But we could also, if a file system supports it, this kind of SMR kind of semantics, we could also put a file system here if we wanted to. So that's kind of what we did on the kernel side. And then on the user space side, since there is SMR support, there's support like using libcpc, which is what's used for traditional hard drives, single magnetic hard drives. There's FIO, which have gained zone support. There's liblight NVMe, that's been built on for a couple of years. That Simon is sitting there, is the maintainer of. There's SPDK. Jim has been graciously taking in patches on Open Channel. Not yelled too much at people, but that's really awesome. So that works as well. So that's kind of, support is growing, and it kind of makes it easier and easier to kind of start using it. So that's really awesome. So this all the support kind of started back in 2016, where we put up the subsystem in the Linux kernel. We put up the user space library, the liblight NVM, and had support for that in like in April last year. And that went up like 4.11 off the kernel. And pblock became in like 4.12, had the Open Channel 2.0 spec released here this January this year, and got support in here 4.17. So that was pretty quick. Then we got SPDK support here in June, the Jim token. And then you have FIO with zone support that came into in August. And then on the side, we're working on enabling like zone block device. So we have an Open Channel SD working in zone itself as an SMR drive and use that ecosystem. Then there's an interesting project in it was at Stanford. Now it's at Santa Cruz. There's a guy called Heiner Litz, which has been working on this idea that normally within an SSD, you have XOR that you cross, you're just driving across multiple chunks, and then you have this parity on the side. His idea was that, hey, let's use that, and then use that to give lower latency. So the idea is that if he knows when he kind of want to read some data that is busy, you'll use the parity to kind of recover the data without going into that particular busy die. And this makes sense because the reads maybe take 50 microseconds, but the write or erase might take 15 milliseconds. It's not that high, but I mean, if you don't have something called erase program suspend on your chip, that makes a big difference. If you do have, it makes less of a difference, but it's still, you can still get away with them. It still makes a lot of sense. And then we're also working on a new version of the spec. It's been proven to be fairly robust, so people have been implementing it. I haven't got too many bug reports. I have a small list that I kind of keep track of and then kind of fix all those small things and put it in a new version of it. So that's kind of the overview of Open Channel. So one thing I want to show, now that we have time to it today, is that, so this is just to show that it kind of works. So this is kind of inception running where we have a virtual machine on my laptop, and within that we have a virtual machine again. So it's kind of slow, but it gets the idea across. So for this, we kind of brought it up, and we have this NVMe drive that's Open Channel, we can see that because it's NVM, that's the prefix we use for the Light NVM subsystem, and it's kind of registered. So that kind of means that we are there. And then we go in here and the blocks subsystem there, and let me see. This is normally where you kind of get your information about the block device that you have. And here we have a Light NVM thing. And basically here what we can see is that this particular drive is a 2.0 drive. We can see that it has, per each chunk, it's 4,096. So this is a 16 megabyte chunk because it's 4K LBAs. Then we can see how many chunks are there. There's 64, but then there are multiple parallel units, which means we have four. So in general, there's 256 kind of chunks in this SSD. So that's great. So one of the things, so this particular kernel is extended with exposing an Open Channel SSD as a zone block device. So that means I can take my favorite block zone support, like tool command line tool, which is basically, in all newer Linux versions, this is available, and I can basically just point it to the Open Channel SSD, and then it will list like. So this is kind of a convoluted format, but basically it shows like here's the status of so chunks and zones. When I intermix them, it's the same thing roughly. So they have a start address, they have a length, and they have a write pointer, and then there's like SMR specific, and then you can see this particular zone is empty. So that's great. So all that is in place. Cool. So then what we can do is, I talked about pblock. Let's do that. So we can create, there's here. So in the NVMe CLI tool, we have like there's support for that. So we can go in and say, oh, great. And then we had the NVMe drive, and we're going to call this particular drive the instance, the device we want to create, the block device. It's called pblock0. And then we're going to go, the type is we want to instantiate pblock as a target. So the target is called pblock. That target type is called pblock. And then we're going to say we had four parallel units, so let's put an FTL on those parallel units. That's great. So that worked. Basically, we can see here in the bottom, that is initialized. So that's great. So let's put a file system on it. There we go. Oh, the right one. There we go. And it's created. So file system is on. Let's mount it. So now we have to picture it has a drive, has pblock. Now we're going to put a file system on top. So that's great. So that worked as well. Yay! That's good. And then we can run like an FIO script. So we just do like small IOs, like 128K, IODF1, small file, whatever. Like just show, hey, it works. So this performance is out the window. It doesn't matter. So basically show that it kind of works. So it lays it out, and we can kind of read-write from it. So this kind of read-write workload, we get like measly 62 megabytes per second. It's not really. It's there. It works. That's awesome. Yeah, cool. So that was the one thing. So we showed that we kind of have an open channel C, and we can see what it can be a block device. Let's go off with this again. And then we're going to kill this one. And remove it. Remote. And kill this pblock one. There we are. So now we are like took pblock off, and now we're back to the device. So the cool thing I want to show, and that's what we kind of lead up to, is that what if we could just take F2FS and point it to our open channel drive? So F2FS is actually lock structure within, and it has support for SMR. And that means now that I exposed the open channel SSD as an SMR drive, it should work seamlessly. Obviously, when I try to create it, well, it sees, hey, I'm host managed. You really need me to have some block feature and it's required. Okay, so we go into there, and you can do like dash m. That tells the story. Whoops, it gets created. So that's awesome. So now we can do mount this one here, there, and then we can do here. And now I simply mounted F2FS on top of an open channel SSD. F2FS is the FTL. So that what this basically means, so pblock, if you bring it up, it takes 1 gigabyte of DRAM per 1 terabyte of storage. F2FS doesn't do that. It's a couple of megabytes. So suddenly we reduce the need for DRAM by 1,000x. So that's pretty cool. So what we can do now, we can do the same, read-write, and fire it off, do it twice, and see, like, kind of get the same kind of idea. It's like it just works out of the box. So that's pretty cool. That's what I wanted to show. So a long time it's been like you can get the uses of open channel, but there's not big idea in it if you just expose it as a block device. The cool part is when you can do this, or when you can do. I've heard some computational storage startup has been doing this for databases, and that's pretty awesome. That's kind of what you could do with this kind of architecture. You can reduce this DRAM, and you can have, and you can also, so say when you were Fusion IO back in the days, you had all the CPU overhead. Now the CPU doesn't exist because it's in the file system, and it's something you anyway needed to do, so you get an FTL for free. And that's pretty awesome, so you don't need to have resource for it. So that's kind of the idea of it. Cool. Then the last thing I want to talk about is what's next. And this has been the path to standardization. So yesterday, the board approved these two new TPARs that kind of went into NVMe. So there's two main use cases. So this is the official NVMe slides, kind of where they presented into the NVMe workgroup a while back. And there's two use cases. One is hardware isolation, which is these kind of parallel units. And another one is write-amp reduction, which is the stream zones kind of approach. And there is a need from certain customers that want to have be able to slot an SSD into different pieces, which for OpenTel means that you have these parallel units. But and kind of what fixed that up came into NVMe a little while back is the IO determinism. And one thing is that we want more of that. We want to extend it. So there was going into there. And then there was, where we want to have these zones, where we want to actually be able to place the data more explicitly. So streams kind of fix this in NVMe, but it's a logical construct. You don't have a bounds on it. The idea would be to add these bounds to make the host more intelligent about placing its data. So this means that there's this work beginning in the NVMe work group. So yesterday in the board meeting, it got approved for phase two, which means now we can start working on the spec. So the one thing is what we call zone namespaces, and it adds this chunk abstraction into the NVMe. So this is kind of, it's the SMR interface, and that's kind of where we want to keep it compatible such that you can, if you had the crazy idea that you want to tunnel an hard drive through that, you could, but it's not really, I don't know if it makes sense, but you could. But it kind of keep it similar because, not because of the hardware, but because of the software ecosystem. So the open channel subsystem took 3 years roughly to make. And similar on the SMR side, this has been going on for 3 or 4 years. So it's a lot of work that kind of goes into making this support. And we don't want to duplicate that, because then if we go in and build a new spec and a new thing and maybe a new paradigm, then it's going to be 3 to 4 years before we have a software stack that we can actually utilize it. And then there's these, and then so that's one part. And then the other part is the set endurance groups management, where we want to expose this parallelism further. So usually when you take an SSD that supports IO determinism, you kind of pre-configure it to one configuration. The idea is that you can configure it at runtime if you want to. And I talked a little about the ecosystem. So basically all this, what I just showed you here with F2FS, I mean, building this and getting this into NVMe and get it standardized, this will work out of the box. So we have prototypes working internally that kind of works with zone namespace and everything. So that's pretty awesome. So the idea is that all this code is already being used by Microsoft and other people in the Linux ecosystem. So it's already in use today and been tested and production friendly. So when we then bring this kind of zone namespaces and extend the IO determinism into NVMe, we can from day one have production software that people that uses the SSD can use from day one. Cool. So that was what I had. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you have questions about the material presented in this podcast, be sure and join our developers mailing list by sending an email to developers-subscribe@snea.org. Here you can ask questions and discuss this topic further with your peers in the storage developer community. For additional information about the Storage Developer Conference, visit www.storagedeveloper.org.